Looking for a new sports show?
So my wife and I go to the movies because you have to go opening weekend.
Yeah, I was with my boy, so he got us right up to the front of the line of this new club.
So I'm stuck watching my sister's dog again. He's throwing up all night.
2.5 games back in the standings, I feel like the Mets are one big bat away from competing. Imagine that. A sports show that's about sports. The Joe Fan Show. Are you fan enough?
Welcome to the Joe Fan Show with your host, Clayton Hamilton.
Greetings, sports fans. My name is Clayton Hamilton, and you're listening to the Joe Fan Show, coming to you live from fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada, the greatest city in the world. Right here on the home of Vegas sports, NBC Sports Radio 920 The Game. Let's check the headlines. The new Golden Boy Boxing on ESPN series has announced the main event for its first telecast on April 20th. Michael Perez of Newark, New Jersey will fight Marcelino Lopez of Argentina in a scheduled 10-round junior welterweight bout. The winner will look to catapult themselves into the contender status for the WBO and WBC champion Terrence Crawford's belt. Buffalo Bills quarterback Tyrod Taylor has passed a physical, and he will be medically cleared after having groin surgery in January. If the Bills keep him on the roster after March 11th, he will be fully guaranteed his $27.5 million base salary for 2017. And Budapest, Hungary has officially withdrawn their Summer Olympic bid for 2024, leaving only Paris and Los Angeles in the race. It would be the third time that each city has hosted the Summer Olympics, Paris hosting in 1900 and 1924, while Los Angeles was the host in 1932 and 1984. Today we have Matt Reed and Jeff Klein. This is the Joe Fan Show, NBC Sports Radio 920 The Game. Are you fan enough?
Get loud and let's get proud, 'cause we got a game to play. Game on, let's play ball. There won't be a better time to give it our all. Stand tall, let's get it on. I know you hear that crowd, they're about to get loud. It's game on.
The Joe Fan Show is brought to you by the Las Vegas Pain Relief Center, with locations in both Henderson and on the West Side. Dr. John Patrick and his dedicated staff are committed to helping you lead a pain-free life. Visit them at lvprc.com and take the first step toward a feeling great. Clayton Hamilton here in Las Vegas, going out to Oakland, California, to my buddy Matt Reed. Welcome, Matt. Hello, Matt. Are you with us?
Hey, Clayton. Great to be here.
Hey, how you been, buddy?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing excellent. I got a little something that I got to tell you, though, Matt, and it goes like this. Feel the rhythm. Feel the rhyme. Get on up. It's bobsled time. Cool runnings, man.
Cool runnings. So, I miss John Candy. I wish John Candy was still around.
Yeah, he was great. What a fun movie. But I know that you were anxiously awaiting your World Cup a bobsled update, and we do have a winner. Francesco Friedrich, his fourth straight world championships. He takes the two-man title at Lake Koenigsee in Germany. A four-man coming up this weekend.
And I know you're pumped for that. Big weekend for you.
I am. Huge weekend. The four-man. Everybody loves the four-man. Stephen Holcomb, disappointing a seventh, but Justin Olsen and Evan Weinstock from right here in Las Vegas had a terrible opening run. They were down at 21st, battled all the way back to 11th. Had the third best start of anybody, so looking forward to what they can do in the four-man. Canadians are running really well. Justin Cripps coming out of nowhere to get second. So bobsled four-man this weekend. I cannot wait. I also cannot wait for the start of Major League Baseball spring training games. That gets underway on Friday. So we're going to bring in Jeff Klein, our baseball guy, early out from L.A. Welcome, Jeff.
How you guys doing?
We're doing fantastic. I know you got to be pretty excited. You're just 2 days away from the start of regular spring training games.
Yeah, it's such a great time for baseball fans. I mean, you know, Dodgers, I expect to be great. That's the kind of, you know, they've always been in it the last few years. But I think it's a great time for all the baseball fans, because something about spring training gives every fan hope. mm-hmm. at least until the end of April.
Well, the good thing, Jeff, is, you know, there's a lot of fans sometimes they don't really love all of the spring training games. You know, they only get to see the Stars for the first couple of innings. It's hard to get down to Florida and to Arizona for some folks, and they just want real baseball. But if you want real baseball, you and I got to see some this weekend when you were in town. UNLV Running Rebels have started their baseball journey, and they got a couple of really good-looking players on this squad.
Yeah, you know, I want to echo that. If you know, there's a lot of talk about how baseball is slow and there's too much dead time, and that's, you know, all that pace of play discussion. We won't really get into that. It's been talked about so much. But college baseball is great. It moves. There isn't as much dead time because you obviously don't have the commercials. And if you just want good, solid, fun baseball, get out to your whatever local college you're around and check out some games. Still solid top, you know, quality play. Obviously, they're not all pros, so it's going to be a little sloppy at times, but it's still good, solid baseball.
Their center fielder, Kyle Isbell, he was the Mountain West Freshman of the Year. We saw him play this weekend. He walks a lot. He's got a pretty good glove, got some speed, kind of projects out maybe somewhere between like an Adam Eaton, Cole Calhoun type player.
Yeah, he was pretty impressive as far as his on-base goes. I was looking up a little more into him, and I noticed it, last year what stood out is he got on base safely in 47 games. He had streaks of 14 straight games and 11 straight games where he got on base. And we actually saw that when he walked three times in the game that we were watching and didn't look rattled at the plate, very calm, had a really nice presence at the plate, went up there with a game plan. So that was really a nice, solid player to watch.
The guy, though, that I had to say really stood out to me is true freshman shortstop Bryson Stott from right here in fabulous Las Vegas, went to Desert Oasis High School. When you got a true freshman starting right up the middle at shortstop, everything about this kid was impressive.
Yeah, I know you and I were remarking about his arm, especially we saw that early in the game. He didn't rush throws. He was very confident in his arm, very solid, made that throw across the diamond, and his footwork was great. I thought all aspects of his game was definitely above average, very solid, seemed like a gap hitter, had to put some nice at-bats together. Really smart on the bases. That was, you know, he obviously has a very good baseball IQ. You know, he knew what to do on the bases, and even when it looked like the play, it was going to be a little bit of a botched play, he knew how to kind of create some energy on the bases. So I was actually really excited to see him next, you know, when I'm out there with you guys again. I definitely want to check out another Rebels game.
Yeah, number 10, Bryson Stott, Southern Nevada High School Player of the Year. Extraordinarily impressive, Matt, and I hope you'll get to catch some UNLV baseball when you're out here this spring. But one of the things that was really impressive about this team is they seem to have a high baseball IQ, which sometimes in college, and we saw this with Nebraska-Omaha, that there were some plays defensively for Nebraska-Omaha that they sort of because they hadn't thought ahead of what to do with the ball. This is not a case with UNLV. They seem to have a game plan both offensively and defensively, which is great. I think they're going to do better than middle of the pack of the Mountain West, which is where they're projected. And a lot of this, I think, might have to do with the presence of Greg Maddux, who's working with their pitching staff, and just having a Hall of Famer around can kind of maybe really calm this team down and start to look at things that other teams aren't. How important, Matt, is it to have somebody like Greg Maddux in the dugout?
Oh, it's invaluable. We're talking about a Hall of Famer right here, a guy that probably goes down as one of the best pitchers ever in baseball. And the word pitcher was big with him because he wasn't going to overpower you. He had to use his brain. He had to know how to, you know, pick his spots. And he was a great fielder, too. He fielded his position so well. So all that goes into the game of how mental things are. And I think, especially in baseball, you know, people don't realize the mental aspect that is involved in it and that goes with it. And having a guy like Greg Maddux around is just invaluable. And a lot of teams can't say that they have that kind of guy around to really help their program. So it's huge for UNLV.
Yeah, I can't wait. And he's going to be there for quite a while. His son is a freshman, so they should have Greg Maddux around for quite some time. But like I said, if you haven't gotten out to to UNLV to see this team. I mean, tickets are $8. I think they're $2 on Tuesday. A really fun, good time to see some high-quality baseball. Go to UNLV, go to their website, check out their schedule, catch this team. We will be all summer. And keep your eye on Kyle Isbell and Bryson Stott, their center fielder and shortstop. Two guys that have a little bit of a future in this game. So let's get out and support your running Rebels. The last of the free agents finally fell, Jeff. Matt Wieters, formerly of the Baltimore Orioles, he signed a 2-year deal to go to Washington.
Yeah, seemed like a pretty good value for the type of player they're getting. 2 years, $21 million. Interesting thing is he can opt out after the first season, so you know if he has a great year, he's on a pretty reasonable deal. Most likely would opt out. It gives him a little bit of protection. I think that's an interesting aspect considering, you know, everyone thought the market was dead, but he still got a pretty friendly deal, even though the dollars don't speak to that. He'll bring a solid bat to that lineup. I think it's a little bit of a downgrade from what they got last year. Obviously, Wilson Ramos was one of the better hitting catchers in the league, but he's moved on to Tampa Bay.
Matt, yesterday, maybe the four people in the sports world that actually talk about baseball were going crazy, saying that Matt Wieters puts the Nationals over the top. Have we overreacted 2 days into spring training?
Yeah, big time, especially because we don't know if he's going to stay healthy all year, which has been his MO over the last couple seasons, is that he has a hard time staying healthy. So obviously he's a solid veteran, a good player. His bat kind of went away last year. He only hit .243. He had 17 home runs, but we're talking about a team that had an all-star catcher in Wilson Ramos who hit .307 and 22 home runs. So it's not like they're getting an upgrade. Yes, they get a catcher that they needed, but he's definitely not the guy that I think to put them over the top.
And they also go ahead, Jeff.
So, you know, if I want to just add to that really quick, just to give our listeners a little bit of perspective, there's a statistic out there called RC Plus. It stands for runs creation. It's sort of a composite of how many runs a player can generate between, you know, all aspects of a game on offense. And 100 is sort of the average. So Wilson Ramos was 124, meaning he's 24% better than the average hitter. Matt Wieters was 88, which means he's 12% worse. So, you know, I think more than a little bit of a downgrade, it's a significant drop off.
And it was odd to me, Jeff, because they had already sort of seemed to have solved their catching issue in that they brought in Derek Norris and they have Jose Lobaton. And let's not forget that Pedro Severino, who's down at AAA, he's their number 11 organizational prospect. And they sort of expect that he could be up this year, certainly next year.
Derek Norris, he's a solid catcher. He doesn't have the name like Matt Wieters, but he's probably a lot closer to Matt Wieters than Matt Wieters is to Wilson Ramos. So I do think whatever they liked about Matt Wieters, he adds to that team. You know, it depends on what the GM's looking for. Catchers have so many different facets of their game. And I do think it allows the Nationals to maybe recoup a little bit of what they lost in terms of prospects. They can trade Derek Norris to another team and try to get some pieces back.
One of the big questions for the Nats coming in is going to be the back end of that bullpen, Jeff. They have seen some pretty good guys back there. They had Tyler Clippard for a while. They had Drew Storen for a while. Drew Storen is off in Cincinnati. Tyler Clippard's been out for a while. He's going to be with the Yankees. Mark Melancon, they traded for him. He's now gone to San Francisco. There's not a real big name recognition, big time closer. I don't expect Jonathan Papelbon's going to pop up and reunite with the Nationals. They're looking at Sean Kelly. Is that going to be enough?
Yeah, I think Sean Kelly's going to surprise some people. He does have some experience closing, and he didn't do too badly. He's not been a closer his entire career, but he's been able to step in when asked. An interesting thing to note about Sean Kelly last year, in 58 innings, he struck out over 12 batters per 9 innings, and he walked under 2 batters per 9 innings. So those numbers speak well if you're going to be a closer and you want a guy who's going to come in and sort of shut the door on a team. Blake Treinen is another name that's been mentioned. His walks are pretty high. The one advantage Treinen has over Kelly is that Kelly's been prone to give up the long ball, not something you want in your closer. and Trinan has been a lot better than your average major league reliever in that respect. But otherwise, across the board, I think Sean Kelly is more than respectable, and I think he can do the job as a closer.
They've also reached out in terms of some guys they're bringing in, Matt, on non-roster invitees. They've got Matt Albers is going to be in camp. Joe Nathan is going to be in camp. Are we going to really see Joe Nathan in a big league uniform again?
he can never die, Joe Nathan. He's always around. And Joe Nathan was an elite closer back in the day. But, yeah, Joe Nathan has nothing left. Like Jeff said, I think Kelly's a solid option. He's not going to wow you, and he's not going to be the kind of guy that you really want to bank on in the ninth inning. But as we've seen with a lot of teams, the closers are hard to come by, and that's what we saw this offseason. Closers got paid big time. We saw Chapman break the bank, and we saw Jansen break the bank. So, yeah, the closers are tough. They do have a young guy in Coda Glover, I know, that people have talked about that possibly, halfway through the season could be a guy that takes over the closer role. But, yeah, that bullpen is not something you really want to rely on right now, because there aren't a lot of, solid arms out there.
Yeah, Jeff, Coda Glover's a guy that you have been watching. He was up a little bit last year, got into 19 games, about 19 innings. His whip was okay at 1.12, suffered a little bit with the ERA, but part of that probably had to do with the lack of innings.
Yeah, I mean, he's pretty inexperienced. He'd only had 1 year of experience in the minors prior to getting called up last year. So he's got options. They'll probably send him down and maybe look at him, let him refine his pitches a little more. His walk rate was really high. Obviously, it's a small sample, but he walked 7 guys in a total of 19 innings. It's not really someone if that's going to be a sort of a small sample of a larger picture for a whole season, probably someone you need to have work on his pitches a little more, maybe some of his secondary pitches. So, I think he's going to be a contributor to the bullpen, just probably not immediately and maybe not for the 2017 season.
The Nationals are going to be in a dogfight all year with the Mets. If you want to talk about a team with a lot of question marks going into spring training, it's the Mets. They've got too many outfielders, and they've got too many infielders. And when you look at that infield, Jeff, you never know how long you're going to have David Wright. When is he going to move to first base? The Mets seem to be waffling on how much confidence they have in Lucas Duda.
Yeah, David Wright, I think it came out yesterday that they were having David Wright start some fielding drills in private away from public view. They said they didn't want it to affect his confidence if he struggles a little bit because, he's got that spinal stenosis, which is a pretty serious condition, and you're right, you never know how long his back will hold up. I think it's interesting that he could end up at first. Lucas Duda is also someone who's got some health questions, and so you could preserve both of their seasons by giving them each a little bit of rest and platoon them over there at first. And the natural righty-lefty matchups would come into play there. So it makes some sense, especially because they do have, it seems like, excessive infielders. So I think that's a serious option they should look at, and hopefully the Mets will.
They decided to bring back Neil Walker. He signed the qualifying offer, Matt. They got Asdrubal Cabrera at shortstop. They've still got Jose Reyes, who played a lot of third when Wright wasn't around. He could be an option to play some third, some short. He can play some second. Ahmed Rosario is really their sort of young stud at AAA. I don't know that they're necessarily ready to bring him up. He could be somebody they're looking at for next season. And then they've got Wilmer Flores. How do they divide up the innings with all these guys?
Yeah, that's a great question. We're talking about a logjam there in the infield. Injuries, as we've seen in baseball and really in all sports, injuries are going to play a key, and we know the Mets, of all teams, really have trouble staying healthy. So it can't hurt to have the extra bodies. But, obviously Cabrera's their guy at short. Neil Walker's going to start at second, and we'll see how long he lasts. It's Reyes, Wright, Flores. Where do we go there between those three, and who's really going to get the time? And I think Jose Reyes he showed a little something last year where if he could bounce back, I think he's a guy that actually gives them a little bit of upside, more so than Wilmer Flores and David Wright right now. So I think Reyes will work his way into the lineup more often than not, but they do have the option of platooning all these guys. I mean, they can all play different positions, so it is kind of a luxury more than it is a hindrance, I think.
In the outfield, they had sort of tried to move Jay Bruce a lot, Jeff. They've also talked that maybe Jay Bruce could find his way to first base because they have a log jam in the outfield with Lagares and Conforto, Cespedes, Bruce, and Granderson.
Yeah, I mean, Lagares is their best fielder, but his bat's not there when you look at the other options. And I still expect them to probably move one of these guys. It might have to wait till the All-Star break or the trade deadline. Conforto, they're really high on, but right now he's looking at a seat behind Cespedes, Granderson, and Bruce. Like Matt said, they have a lot of options to maybe do platoons and play guys to their strength. My concern with so many platoon guys is how do you get a rhythm going with a team? You need kind of need guys in there every day. If you have, it's fine for one or two positions, but when you have so many players you need to get in and get at bats for, it starts to become an issue.
Matt, does that really matter? Granderson hits 237, Bruce hits 219, and Conforto hits 220.
Yeah, well, can Conforto hit a lefty? That's the first question. You know, if he is going to be an everyday guy, which I thought, you know, he showed some signs a year or two ago that he was going to be an everyday guy, but the fact that he can't hit lefties is hurting him right now. But yeah, you're right. I mean, the Mets live and die by the long ball, and all, you know, you're not going to see these guys hit for average. You're going to see him hit home runs. So I don't know what kind of groove they need to get in. Can Jay Bruce hit over 200 this year? That's a real question.
Will he ever do that again in his career? But I think all of this ultimately comes down to just one thing. I'm going to give you the last word, Jeff, before we head off to break. It's all going to come down to how healthy DeGrom, Harvey, Mats, and Syndergaard are.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, the real success of their team will be measured by their rotation. And, yeah, if they're healthy, which there's a lot of questions there, but if they're healthy, I think the offense will take care of itself.
All right. Well, thank you, Jeff. We will check in with you as a spring training unfolds. Matt's going to stick around, and we're going to talk a little NCAA basketball right after the break. This is the Joe Fan Show, NBC Sports Radio 920, The Game. The Joe Fan Scoreboard is brought to you by Kazoom Adventures. For outdoor hikes that can win you money, visit radio.gokazoom.com for exclusive picture and video clues. Get outdoors, find flags, play Kazoom. The hottest new game in Vegas, radio.gokazoom.com. In college basketball tonight, 6 of the top 10 teams are in action, starting at 4 p.m. Jamie Dixon's TCU Horned Frogs visit Fog Allen Fieldhouse and Bill Self's number 3 Kansas Jayhawks. Also at 4, number 10 Duke and Coach K head to the Carrier Dome to face Jim Boeheim's Syracuse Orangemen. 3 more big games tip off at 6. Number 7 Louisville is at number 8 North Carolina. Number 6 Oregon is at Cal. And number 22 Butler is at number 2 Villanova. And your UNLV Runnin' Rebels are in Colorado Springs tonight to play the Air Force Academy. That one also gets underway at 6. No games tonight in the NBA as they will end their All-Star break. They will resume competition tomorrow. And 3 games are in the NHL at 4:30. Connor McDavid and the Oilers are in Florida to play Jaromir Jagr and the Panthers. At 5, the Capitals are at Philadelphia to play the Flyers. And at 7:30, the Bruins head to Anaheim to play the Ducks. That is a look at your Joe Fan scoreboard. So, Matt, no NBA today. Trade deadline coming up tomorrow gives us a nice big helping of college basketball. All eyes on the ACC and some Hall of Fame coaches getting together in a couple of juicy matchups. Duke at Syracuse, followed by Louisville at North Carolina. Get your popcorn ready.
Oh yeah, we're talking a lot of action tonight. It's gonna be fun to watch. Like you said, this Duke team has really picked it up. They're playing well right now. But Louisville, North Carolina, I mean, we're talking about probably two of the best teams in the country, and you know, this could be a possible Final Four matchup.
Let's start with the first game of the evening, Duke at Syracuse. A first time ever, Matt, in NCAA history that two coaches with 1,000 career victories going to match up against each other. Coach K with his 1,065 and Jim Boeheim with his 1,001. He's got really 1,102, though, with the asterisk for those that they have taken away. But still, Boeheim Coach K, as good as it gets, going to be 30,000-plus at the Carrier Dome.
Oh, yeah, that place is going to be rocking. And really, I mean, this is a huge game for Syracuse because I would say right now they're on the bubble. And then I know the ACC has just been rolling, and we're talking, you know, they're looking at maybe getting 11 teams in this year, which would be crazy. But, yeah, it really is a huge game for Syracuse. Like I said, Duke seems to have turned the corner. They're playing really well right now. Kennard obviously being a key for them, the possible player of the year. But anytime you go into the Carrier Dome, you got that half court zone trap, and the anything can happen. But like I said, I think just Duke's too strong right now. Syracuse has kind of fallen off. You know, they've lost three in a row. So we'll see. This is make or break. They're at home. They've had their chance, but the Dukies, look out.
Yeah, I got a question about Boeheim and Coach K because, you know, with the Syracuse being in the Big East for so long, and this was a matchup that you would really only see at tournament time, maybe. So they haven't really played each other a lot. They've started now that they're both in the ACC. But Jim Boeheim was on Coach K's Olympic staff. They won 3 gold medals together: Beijing, London, and Rio. And do you think that during that time and during the practices and during the meetings that they were sizing each other up still for ACC season?
You never know, right? Anytime you're around great coaches, they have to have an ulterior motive, and you can't give away everything you know, even if it was NBA or USA basketball. So, yeah, obviously they were sizing each other up. Maybe at first they didn't know that Syracuse would be making the move to the ACC, but now that they are there and now that we get to see two of the best ever go against each other, it is. It's fun to watch, and X's and O's are a huge part of college basketball, being able to make those adjustments on the fly, and we're talking about two of the best. Obviously, that's how you get to 1,000 wins.
And another big part of this game, there's going to be 6 guys in this game, 3 for Duke, 3 for Syracuse, that shoot over 80% from the line. And I have a feeling there just might be a trip or two to the line in this game. It's going to be physical, I can be sure. Louisville going up against North Carolina. Another couple of coaches, they haven't done much in their career, Matt. Roy Williams, he's got a paltry 806, and poor Rick Pitino only with 765 career victories.
Yeah, it's just so-so, compared to the first two guys.
Couple of young bucks.
Yeah, but I mean, this is a game of the night. Obviously, this is a game everyone's going to have their eye on because we're talking about probably two of the best teams in the ACC, in my opinion. What Louisville's been able to do lately? I mean, they're playing some of the best basketball in the country, and I think a lot of that has to do with Donovan Mitchell. I mean, we've seen him really come on lately. He's averaging 21 points over his last 5 games, shooting 48% from 3, and we know this game's going to be up-tempo, so it's who can take care of the basketball, because Louisville, they got that press, and every time they press, they really force you to take care of the ball, and I think that's what it comes down to. We'll see if Barry obviously is a guy that has experience, a guy that can handle the ball, and if he's able to break through the pressure and set up some easy baskets for the big guys, being at home, Carolina has the edge, but getting 8 points today, I'll take Louisville on the points.
Yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit about that press because one thing that we know about the press and the amount of times that we've seen sort of West Virginia do that, Louisville is not dissimilar in what they're able to do. One matchup that hasn't been talked about a lot is Theo Pinson, and he's the other guard there in North Carolina. Dude is 6'6", and Quentin Snyder and Donovan Mitchell, both 6'2 and 6'3". Is he going to be able to use his size to really help break this press, sort of bully them a little, or if nothing else, keep the ball high and the passes high?
Well, yeah, obviously it helps at his size to be able to see over the top, especially when you're getting trapped and double-teamed. But I think more so it's just the quickness and Louisville just knowing, you know, when to trap. Because if you watch it, you know, it's not always a, you know, the ball's passed and they're running a double, you know. They're watching what the offensive guy is doing. Once he turns his head, then they're bouncing the double-team. And it's just not the trap. I mean, it's just their half-court defense in general. I mean, if you look, they're ranked fifth in the country, you know, in an adjusted defense on KenPom, and you know they're giving up 0.784 points per possession. I mean that's a huge advantage they have defensively against a lot of these teams. But we're talking about a Carolina team that we know they can get up and down the floor. We know they can score, and obviously like you said, Barry and having, you know, a big guard on the other side maybe to help break through this press. If they're able to get, you know, get some easy buckets, I think that's where they take advantage. But like I said, I really like the way Louisville's playing right now. It's going to be a great game. You know, this gets you excited for March Madness. You know, we're the end of February. Everyone's starting to pay attention, and what a great game to actually, you know, if you haven't been watching college basketball, hop on board now because you're going to see a good one tonight.
Yeah, I can't wait to see really too what happens down low with Kennedy Meeks. You know, he's 260 pounds, 6'10", used to pushing people around. And he's going to go with a 7-footer tonight in Mahmoud, who's kind of used to being the biggest guy in the paint. And now he's given up a couple of inches and a lot of pounds, Mahmoud.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, these are some big boys down there, yeah. I mean, even guys like Justin Jackson, I mean, yeah, you know, Carolina, we talked coming into the year, you know, how are their bigs, you know, Meeks, Bradley, Hicks, Jackson, how are they all going to, you know, manage to get along down there? And I think they figure it out. Okay, guys are taking over. Jackson's taking over. But yeah, there's some trees in there tonight. If you're going inside, you better go strong because a lot of bodies in there, a lot of big bodies.
Looking a little bit further down the table in the ACC, and we had talked about how they may get a whole bunch of teams in, it really begs the question about two teams that have sort of, they have been spectacular and they have been terrible, and that is Notre Dame and Florida State. Do you trust Notre Dame or Florida State?
I trust Notre Dame strictly because senior leadership and guards, you know, Vestura has been solid for them. Bonzi Colson, we want to talk about a guy that's really stepped up his play and really over the last 10 games has just been a monster, and that's Bonzi Colson. You know, and Florida State, for me, they're young, they're talented, but they struggle on the road. If you look, I think they've lost their last four or five games straight on the road. You know, they got a couple more road tests before they actually get a home game, and I think that's a true test, especially going into the tournament. Can teams win on the road? Can you win in adverse situations? And can you make free throws? In Florida State, they shoot 68% from the line. Mm-hmm. So, you know, come tournament time, I always stress on that. Senior, junior guards, experienced guard play, and making free throws. And that's something that I would trust Notre Dame far, far more than I would trust Florida State when it comes to that.
Yeah, Florida State, their best free throw shooter is worse than the worst starting player for Notre Dame at free throws. Notre Dame shooting 81% or higher with all of their starters. But I'm too like you. I feel like they can make free throws. I feel like they can make threes when needed. And I feel like Florida State, sometimes there's a lot of standing around watching on offense, where that's not the case with Notre Dame. Mike Bray does make them run without the ball.
Yeah, exactly, and they'll push the pace, and like you, they shoot 40% from three, like you mentioned. I mean, that's such a big part of the game these days is the 3-point line, and you know when you're watching, you know, not only NBA but college basketball, it's teams that can, you know, shoot consistently from three. 40% used to be unbelievable, but now it seems to be the standard. Where if you can't shoot 40% from three, you're in trouble. So yeah, and you know, Notre Dame obviously shoots the three ball well, and they get up and down the floor, like you said, they move without the ball, and it's a big difference. And Florida State's young though. You watch this Florida State team in the next year or two, I think they might figure it out and be a team to reckon with. But right now, I trust Notre Dame over Florida State.
Miami got themselves a nice win over Virginia, but how good is a win over Virginia these days? Virginia looks terrible.
Man, it used to mean something to beat Virginia, but
You know, we've watched them for so long now, and you know, obviously they're solid defensively. They take their time on offense, but the way the game has evolved, it doesn't matter how long you hold on the ball offensively. When other teams are pushing it at you and scoring on fast breaks, and you're going to come walk the ball up the floor and take your time and hold. I mean, they played an overtime game where they didn't even get to 50 points. I mean, that's... you're just not going to win too many games like that. There's no margin for error. If you give up 60, you lose. You know, so that's tough these days, especially in the ACC with so many teams that can get up and down the floor and score. Yeah, Virginia just seems to be going the wrong way right now.
How do you like this stat, Matt? Virginia's 144 points combined in the last three games. That's the lowest three-game span since 1951. With no shot clock in the
no
skinny
shot
key,
clock. And teams used to hold the ball for minutes. I mean, mm-hmm. that's this day and age, that's a shocking stat. And then to see something like that, I mean, you know, Virginia plays slow, but boy, that is just awful. And that's with an overtime game in there.
Exactly, 41% on 2-point shots, and just a 24% from three. London Parentes, their best player, just 4 points in the overtime loss to Miami. So Virginia got some stuff to figure out. And on the flip side, that Miami team getting kind of fun. A lot of freshmen. They got four freshmen out of their eight scholarship players. Four are true freshmen, all making contributions. So Jim Larrañaga and Miami could be fun. And I think, Matt, I think they have probably done enough to get in the tournament as long as they don't collapse over the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, I agree. I think they have. Obviously, the ACC tournament, if you could pick up a win or two there, that'd be really nice to add to the resume. But the best dancing coach in the NCAA.
That's right.
Right there. Keep your eye on Miami.
The Miami Hurricane should be fun down the stretch. When we come back, trade deadline is quickly approaching in the NBA. This is the Joe Fan Show, NBC Sports Radio, 920 The Game. The Joe Fan Show is brought to you by the Las Vegas Pain Relief Center, with locations in both Henderson and on the West Side. Dr. John Patrick and his dedicated staff are committed to helping you lead a pain-free life. Visit them at lvprc.com and take the first step toward feeling great. Clayton Hamilton here in Las Vegas. Matt Reed joining me from Oakland, California, ready to talk a little NBA. A whole lot went on during All-Star weekend. The All-Star game, a bit of a non-story. It's everything that has happened since, Matt. And if what if I were to say to you previously on the Lake Show, Jeannie Buss breaks off her engagement with Phil Jackson, goes on to fire her brother, bringing in former superstar to run the organization, who brings in the evil agent of Kobe Bryant to run the team, whose contract disintegrated the franchise. That's like sends through the hourglass, right, Matt? It is Los Angeles Lakers.
I wish Stefan was here.
I know. We really miss Stefan. Stefan is off getting ready to cover the Oscars and not able to join us today. But oh, how fun it would be to have him here to figure out what in the world is going on with the Lakers. How weird is Thanksgiving now that you fired your brother?
That's got to be an awkward situation, right? You know, having that Thanksgiving dinner with, a fired family member. That's what they say. It's tough to get into business with family and friends, but something had to be done. The Lakers are going the wrong direction. Obviously, I don't know if Magic is the right choice, but, you know, they got some publicity out of it. They bring in the former face of the franchise. With the agent for Kobe Bryant coming in, does that mean Kobe finds his way back there somehow? That's a real question.
Magic said that he wants Kobe to be involved and he can sort of do whatever he wants to come in. But what's weird to me about this whole, I don't get the whole Magic Johnson thing and how this is so great. And what people continually say makes no sense to me. And they said, well, they got to bring in Magic to be the face of the franchise, and Magic can get people on the phone, and these free agents and these other GMs. I tell you this, Matt, every GM in the NBA can get every other GM in the NBA on the phone. Every GM,
all have phones, right?
Yeah, every GM in the NBA can get every single player's agent on the phone. Every one of them.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you're kind of grasping at straws when you're trying to make excuses of what he brings. I mean, look, Magic was just with the Dodgers, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Dodgers brought him in as a face of the franchise, you know, someone that L.A. loves. And, yeah, Magic carries a lot of weight in Los Angeles. But throughout the league, obviously he's respected. But being respected and you know, turning a franchise around, and we've seen what Phil Jackson is done with New York, it's not easy. It's not a job you just walk into and are prepared for and do right away. And, you know, maybe Magic comes in, he gets lucky. I like what they've done with Luke Walton. I like what they've done with the young nucleus right there. I would have liked to seen them, you know, make a bigger push to get Boogie Cousins down there, and maybe knowing if they could have re-signed them, then maybe they would have. But, yeah, I mean, a lot. There's a lot left to be seen, and like you mentioned, that Kobe contract over the last few years really took this team backwards a long way, and it's going to be a while before they're able to build it back up to where it should be.
Yeah, I've never been a huge fan of ex-players running basketball operations or football operations or being the GM. We've seen it work to some success in Boston. Danny Ainge, I think, has done a pretty good job. We saw great success for John Elway. I mean, he won the Super Bowl, but there are more people, ex-players in the graveyard of couldn't get the job done. And I think part of that goes back to Matt, that as a player, all of these media guys say, oh, well, we got to bring in a player because he knows the game. But at some point, I think maybe they don't know the game. And maybe they're so close to it that they understand from a player's perspective what is important. But that's not necessarily what is important from an organizational standpoint or how to achieve from it. It's like they're so close to it that they can't step back and look at all of the components objectively because they only have experience from one perspective.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you know, putting a franchise or putting a team together and you know, really working contracts and all of that is something that, you know, I don't think Magic has really ever had any experience with. And I know they're bringing in a GM, but, you know, this seems like it was a deal that was already in place because, yeah, they're bringing in an agent who obviously has, you know, some experience, you know, working contracts for players on the player's side, but working a whole roster worth of contracts and doing all that, I think they could have taken their time and really gone out to look for a GM that might have been interested in coming there, someone with a proven track record, because they're still the Lakers, and it's still a job that everyone would want. But the fact that, you know, they did this so quick, they bring in Magic, you know, they're bringing in the agent to be the GM, it just all seems rushed to me. And we'll see. I mean, if there is anyone that could do it right, it's the Magic, man.
Yeah, it's just weird to me. I think you're right on to something with the timing of it, because why? Why is this necessary? The Lakers aren't going anywhere this year. To make a move now or to do your research and to bring in some people to do this in the offseason or to make that decision prior to the playoffs, what's the difference other than you're able to put in your time and your research?
Yeah, exactly. And to do it right before the trade deadline, too. We're talking, you know, 2 days before the trade deadline is when they're making this move. And Magic walks right in, and, you know, Lou Williams obviously was a pretty, you know, valuable piece that a lot of teams were looking at. And Magic sends him over to Houston, which, you know, obviously you think you would maybe move him to the East. Not that the Lakers are really worried this year about anything happening, but to get Corey Brewer and a first-round pick out of Houston – maybe not the best value they could have gotten, but yeah, Magic came in right off the bat, started making moves.
And Lou Williams joins an already offensively potent team in the Rockets, and we've seen what kind of scorer Lou Williams is, particularly off the bench. How good of a fit is that going to be for the Rockets? Like, I look at that as being a great move for them.
Absolutely. We know the Rockets have one style to play, and that's just up-tempo, let it fly, and we're going to outscore you. I mean, there's no qualms about them being a team that's going to play defense. The only way they're going to beat you is to outscore you. And, yeah, Eric Gordon is probably one of the best six men, you know, in the league off the bench. But Lou Williams, not only can he score, but he can handle the ball. He can pass the ball. You know, he just gives them that extra option. Like you said, when Lou Williams gets hot, We've seen him really go off. You pair him with James Harden the way Harden's been passing the ball this year. I mean, talk about spreading the floor. Who do you really key off of? They have way too many shooters on that team. So yeah, it was a great addition for Houston, especially the style of the play and the way they're going to go at it this year. Yeah, you add a guy like Lou, who I don't know how many 20-point quarters he's had or how quickly he could fill it up. But yeah, I think it's a great match for Houston.
Yes, another great match. Perhaps we will see how it pans out, and I will be looking forward to talking about this with you next week. I don't want to get too much into what will happen. I'd rather watch it. I want to see how this unfolds, and that's Anthony Davis and Boogie Cousins surviving together. So we will get on that next week after we have a couple of games that we can see how they're going to interact together. But that should be pretty exciting, Matt.
Yeah, it's gonna be fun to watch. If Davis could stay healthy and stay on the floor, you want to talk? These are two of the best bigs in basketball, and now they're going to be on the same team. And the best part is they both can stretch the floor. We've seen they both add the 3-point shot to their game. So, I can't wait to watch. It is. It's going to be fascinating to see what the Pelicans do. And talk about if they're a number 8 seed, even though the Warriors are pretty good, boy, that's not a team you want to run into with those two bigs.
Exactly. And the glue guy, the most important person in New Orleans, Drew Holiday, and how he's going to orchestrate having those options. So I can't wait to see the Pelicans. I think I said all eyes of the sports world will be on New Orleans when they tip off this weekend. When we come back, little Q&A time. This is the Joe Fan Show, NBC Sports Radio 920, The Game. It's time for Q&A. Remember, if you would like to send us a question, just email us to submissions@joefanshow.com or tweet us at Joe Fan Show. Clayton Hamilton here in Las Vegas. Matt Reed in Oakland, California, going into the mailbox. Got one here, Matt, from Pat in Henderson, who asks, who won the Paul Feinbaum, Jim Harbaugh Twitter battle? Hashtag the ears or the ego?
I would have to go with the ego, just for the fact that he called him Pete Feinbaum. I think when you, I don't know if he did it on purpose. It doesn't seem like a thing that he would do on purpose. It's just Harbaugh for you. He doesn't even care what it is. And when he called him Pete, that's for the win right there.
Yeah, I have to go with Harbaugh as well, because I don't think that Paul Feinbaum can win anything. Not anything.
No.
I've never liked him much. I think his show's kind of lame. So
yeah,
I'm a huge SEC guy.
Who likes SEC guys?
And I'm a huge Buckeye. I'm as anti-Michigan as you can get, and I still can't root for Paul Feinbaum, even against Harbaugh. So
that says a lot, right there.
Yeah, Pete Feinbaum. Manuel in Las Vegas asks, do you like the decision by both Canelo Alvarez and Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. to settle on a catch weight of 164.5? Hashtag pretty puncher versus pretty boy.
Yeah, no, definitely not two of my favorite fighters, that's for sure. But, I think it's a good decision. You meet at that 164. The better decision, from what I heard today, is that both fighters are betting their purse against each other.
Nice. So
supposedly Alvarez is going to make over $22 million, they're saying, and the Chavez making $5 million, but Alvarez had no problem that they shook on live TV. Obviously, with boxing, all the stunts that go with it, but it was on a Spanish-speaking talk show, and they decided to bet their purse against each other. So
wow, he's giving him the odds, huh?
Added drama to the fight, right?
Yeah, I think it doesn't matter what the weight is, because I think Canelo is just going to bloody him, and he's going to mop the floor with silver spoons, and I cannot wait to see that. I just can't wait.
Yeah, Chavez has never been one of my favorite fighters, and I just don't think he's very good, right?
He's not, and
I don't think Alvarez is great, but he's better than Chavez.
And Julio Cesar Chavez is the only person on the planet I think that I would root for Conor McGregor against. Because I can't stand Conor McGregor so much that I would root for Floyd Mayweather Jr. against him. But I think against Julio Cesar Chavez, I can't think of another fighter that I want to see lose more than Julio Cesar Chavez. So I'm looking forward to that. Can't wait for Canelo to take it out on Pretty Boy. This has been Clayton Hamilton and Matt Reed in Las Vegas. You've been listening to the Joe Fan Show on NBC Sports Radio 920 The Game. T.C. Martin, the doctor, is next. Let's get it.